Heather Sharone joins us now from the Daily Line. She's the managing editor of this, the Daily Line, a great publication. Such a great newsletter you should check out every morning that really gets you up to speed on what's happening at City Hall, also in Springfield and Cook County. And she joins us here on Extension 720. Heather, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Justin, and your check is in the mail. I appreciate that plug.
It is. That's the first thing I read every morning. And I will say, we're talking a lot tonight just about some of the things, some of the solutions that the mayor asked us to come up with for filling this budget hole. And, you know, I was thinking of some. I have another one to throw out. A tax on small plates.
Oh.
So if there's a restaurant that does small plates, and it's a $50 tax for every small plate, and then it's on the restaurant. And if the waitress comes up and says, "Have you ever dined here before, or have you ever had small plates? Let me explain small plates." That's $75 fine as well. What do you think?
I think that the West Loop would revolt.
We get so much money from the West Loop right there. Heather, we're kind of joking around tonight, but there, you know, this is looking at the. The budget, that hole, that is $838 million that needs to somehow be filled in the next, you know, or ideas in the next 3 months. Before we get there, how did we get to this moment when you look at last year and the mayor, last Mayor Emanuel saying, you know what, oh my gosh, we are almost close to zero on this, net zero. How did we get to $838 million for the next year?
One word, pensions. Mm. That's essentially a third of the $838 million shortfall. And the issue is that several years ago, the state law changed to require the city to basically boost its payments to its four pension funds in order to reach a 90% funding level.
Got it. Right.
And that is sort of the bill that's coming due now. And if it wasn't for that, the city would be still in not great shape, but you wouldn't be hearing people like me tossing around words like crisis and unprecedented and, you know, running around with our hair on fire, which it feels like a lot of people are doing right now.
Well, when you look at it, and Lawrence Massal tweeted out from the Civic Federation just a snapshot, a graph from the last 15 years of budget deficits. And you see the numbers. I think it was 2011, right after the economic downturn, that, you know, something like $400 or $500 million was the highest it's been. This, it blows it out of the water, and we're not even looking at next year and the year after. I mean, there is something to be said about it being unprecedented and in uncharted waters for the city of Chicago.
Absolutely, and I should say, in Rahm Emanuel's defense, although he certainly does not need little old me defending him, the way that Lori Lightfoot calculated the budget deficit is different than Rahm Emanuel had been doing it. And she says it's a more accurate, complete look, but last year's budget deficit didn't look really at the pension debt. So that's the bill that's coming due this year. And Rahm Emanuel basically said, well, we don't have to pay it this year, so I'm not going to worry about it this year. And now we're in the position that we're in. So that graph, and Lawrence Massal is always 100% on point. It's just a little bit misleading because it's a little bit apples and oranges in the way that things were calculated. And that, I think, is part of the problem because, you know, lies, damn lies, and statistics, right? You can sort of not juke the stats, but sort of shape things. And let's not forget that Mayor Lightfoot is, you know, just coming into office, and it's relatively not all that uncommon for new mayors or new presidents or new governors to come into office and say, whoa, I found some really terrible stuff nobody told me about.
Right.
In an attempt to sort of maybe give themselves a little bit more playroom to, you know, figure out what's going on.
And that makes a lot of sense when you look at Lawrence's graph and you see in 2011 that was the highest at 500 plus whatever million dollars, and then it went away. It may be the same thing that Mayor Emanuel, when he came into office, did the same thing, reshaped the numbers to give himself a little bit of cover to make tough decisions.
Correct. Now, the big issue facing Mayor Emanuel, of course, was that the city basically had to boost its contributions to the pension, to the police and fire pension funds before the other two funds, which are for laborers and for municipal workers. So when you think back at 2015, and I think you and I talked about this a little bit, that, you know, historic property tax increase, that was really geared to get the fire and police pension funds on track. Now we're sort of dealing with all four, and all four are ramping up significantly.
So you mentioned property taxes, and you know now we're as the mayor in her primetime speech talked about, we have to come together and come up with creative solutions for this budget deficit. What should we make of some of these floated ideas, whether it be a congestion tax or a city income tax or any tax whatsoever?
Well, I think you've really got to put the potential solutions in two buckets. One bucket is solutions that the city council could enact by itself, and that includes things like a congestion tax or a property tax increase. The other bucket of potential solutions are things that the city council needs permission from the General Assembly to do, and that includes an income tax, that includes a sales tax on high-end luxury services, and that also includes a congestion tax. So what the city could do with sort of a congestion tax is to increase the ride-hailing fee on Uber and Lyft. So that would be sort of a quasi-congestion tax, because we all know that all of those cards are adding to the, you know, rush day, as Mayor Lightfoot said. So that's what they could do. But the city council's hands are really tied in a lot of ways in terms of how they can raise revenue. And Mayor Lightfoot has said...
Uh-oh, I think we lost Heather there. We'll get her back on the line here. It's actually a perfect time because we can take a break. But, it's interesting because... you can think about that. My next question, which we'll forego and continue the conversation when we get her back, is just, you know, the Springfield session, the veto session will be coming up here soon. I guess it would be in October. So there's going to be some questions of whether or not she can get that stuff through to Springfield. And if Springfield will have the appetite to bail out Chicago. So that'll be coming up. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get Heather back on the line since we've got to get to the break anyway. It's perfect timing. Heather, always is perfect timing. Phone goes out right when we need to take a break anyway. And we come back, we'll talk about the union negotiations and also some other things on the docket today. Federal oversight, CPS, when it comes to sexual misconduct and assault allegations. Timothy Evans is back. And the lawsuit to rescind tax subsidies for Lincoln Yards may not happen. So all that coming up here on Extension 720. So stay with us. Extension 720 rolling along here on 720 WGN. We got Heather Sherrown back on the line. She's the managing editor over at the Daily Line, which covers all things Chicago, county, state when it comes to politics. And you can sign up for their newsletter as well, which is great. Let's continue the conversation. We'll move on from the budget and talk about union negotiations. We both, whether it's the teacher negotiations or police negotiations or fire, it's all in the news right now. It just seems like a chaotic event or a lot of negotiations for the new mayor right now, Heather.
That's right, and it's important to keep in mind that when we were talking about the budget, we weren't even talking about pay raises that teachers are looking for, that police officers are looking for, and that firefighters are looking for. So that is what I like to call an unknown known that the city is going to have to figure out how to pay for and get those deals done. The teachers could go on strike as soon as October 7th, so that's probably the most pressing contract, but the police and the firefighters have been working without a contract for more than 2 years.
Wow.
At this point.
That's amazing. And is this something that you might see that Lori Lightfoot kicks the can down the road? If there's already been 2 years without a contract, can it be four? Can it be six? Is that something that we might see from the future politicians of Chicago?
It's hard to imagine it going much longer, but it's equally as hard to imagine figuring out a deal for the police union, which has been very critical of the mayor and her approach to police reform. And it's, you know, we talk about this as reporters in the City Hall press room sometime. We all can't imagine what a deal that would be acceptable to the Fraternal Order of Police and the City Council, which, of course, has moved significantly left since the last election.
Right.
What that agreement looks like, it boggles my mind. And if I had a crystal ball, that's the question I would ask.
You saw this week, you know, she's being public about some of this. Obviously with the teachers union, they're both talking about what's on the table, what's not, and come together. But you saw with the police being sort of frustrated and angry about overtime, and even going to the fire department and saying, or the fire union and saying, hey, you know, can we get some concessions, and not necessarily winning those concessions. So it doesn't seem like she has allies, even though some of these unions backed her for her campaign.
Absolutely. These are really tough, you know, life or death, you know, decisions. So one of the issues with the fire department is whether what level of staffing should be in every firehouse. And critics of the current deal, or I guess the last now expired deal, would say that there are too many firefighters on duty at any given time because the department just doesn't fight as many fires as it used to. And most of the calls it answers are calls for medical assistance. So the department really has to sort of, you know, perhaps change and enter this, you know, brand new modern era. But that's really difficult because you're talking about people's livelihoods. And, you know, you don't ever want to be in a situation where you don't have enough staff to respond to a catastrophe, especially with, you know, the threat of terrorism prominent in all of our minds with the anniversary of September 11th, right, just this year. So these are all decisions that have no easy answers, because if there had been easy answers, this would have gotten done 2 years ago. Right. And now it just gets a little bit harder every single day.
Oof. All right, we got about five things to talk about in 5 minutes, so let's do a little rapid fire. Lots going on. CPS gets federal oversight when it comes to their the Tribune's great piece on sexual misconduct and assault allegations. What does that entail? What does that mean to get federal oversight of CPS when it comes to monitoring sexual misconduct?
Well, it's very similar to the consent decree that the police department is under, and essentially the federal government has laid out a series of requirements that the school district is going to have to meet, and it's going to have to change the way that it takes complaints in from students about sexual misconduct and how it investigates those.
Now,
complaints.
I was under the impression they did that already. That the CPS, right after that report, they're like, and Rahm Emanuel, they went on a whole, they were on the press blitz.
They sure did.
Why do we need the federal government if they fixed it?
Well, I think that's a really good question, and the federal government certainly implies that they didn't fix it. And we heard Mayor Lightfoot sort of look a little bit sideways at that, noting that, of course, Betsy DeVos is Trump's appointed education secretary, and she sort of suggested that, you know, maybe we shouldn't take their decision at face value, because, of course, Chicago has been in the president's crosshairs for, what is it, like a decade, 20 years, 25 years, something like that at this point.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't think about that, but that does make a little bit of sense. Let's move on. Timothy Evans is back. This was a decision made. This is a strange, archaic way that they do this, but he's going to run the courts again. And it was a secret closed door meeting where they all said, "Hear ye," and they wore robes and there were candles. I guess I don't know. I wasn't in there. But what happened today, and what does it mean that Timothy Evans is going to be running the courts again?
All of the Cook County judges, so this is people who decide everything from murder cases to traffic tickets to who marry people in the basement at City Hall, got together and they decided that Tim Evans would continue to be the chief judge, which he has been since 2001. So he gets another term in office, and it will be his eighth. That's a record. And he was able to convince people that he was the status quo was working. And of course, this has been an issue in recent weeks, and you and I have talked about this, that he's really led the push for bond reform, which Mayor Lightfoot has been really critical of and has basically accused him of contributing to Chicago's gun violence. Now, he said today that he had recently met with the mayor and they had a great conversation. So maybe that all is going to be resolved, but it's certainly an issue and one that his opponent tried to make hay out of.
Yeah, that's quite a political kingpin in Timothy Evans. He's been around forever.
Sure.
All right. Lawsuit to rescind tax subsidies for Lincoln Yards doesn't look like it's going to happen. This story, we could do an hour on this story, just that
easy.
It seemed like they were fudging the numbers to get the tax subsidy through in a rush, but it sounds like the judge today says this lawsuit may not have merit.
Well, I mean, state law says that if you're going to use tax increment financing, the property has to be blighted. The truck-sized loophole in that law is that blight means whatever the city decides that it means. And the judge basically said, look, I'm going to take a look at this argument. I'm going to make sure that the city follows the law. But if they made this agreement, I don't know that I have the standing to undo the agreement. And what the groups are arguing is that essentially this was rushed through in the waning days of Mayor Rahm Emanuel's administration, and that this area isn't actually blighted. It doesn't need city money to be redeveloped because this is right along the Chicago River, and it used to be a steel foundry. And the city's argument is, look, there's no infrastructure out there. There are no streets, there are no streetlights, there are no sidewalks. So essentially, the city would reimburse developer Sterling Bay for building all of that infrastructure, and the city says that without that, the deal won't, you know, it won't be redeveloped. And we should know sometime next week whether the judge is going to dismiss the case.
Yeah, that's an interesting read, and that's in the Daily Line as well. All right, and the final one, the alderman looked to be pushing through a new, which was a Mayor Lightfoot initiative, to make investigations public. Now, obviously, that sounds like a great thing, and it's surprising to me that it wasn't, but we saw how that played out with the Laquan McDonald investigation.
That's right. So the city's inspector general's office has gotten dozens of requests from every news organization in Chicago for the detailed records of his investigation into what happened, and he has had to reject that because city law does not allow that to be released. And this would change that law, and basically it would give the city's top lawyer ability to sort of consult with the inspector general and say, look, this is a really serious case. It involves a death or a felony, and it's of great public interest. Would we cause any harm to an ongoing investigation if we release this information? And this law would allow him to say, yes, let's go ahead and putting it out. So that's great for you and I. Journalists love laws like this. However, there are big caveats to this. If the investigation involves an employee who's covered by a union agreement that prohibits the release of any information about them, that won't happen. Yeah. So this is going to be another flashpoint between the police union and the city.
All right. Ding, ding, ding. We did it. Heather Cherone, managing editor at the Daily Line. And I'm looking forward to having you start in October back, and we can continue to have these conversations, very important conversations. Heather, thanks
That's
for joining us. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Justin.